And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
And it is that time once again. It is a Friday right here at 77 WABC, and it is indeed time for us, our weekly get-together with the mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Are you cold?
Yes, I am.
It is chilly outside.
In fact, I had a number of requests from various staff members here at WABC to ask the mayor, he's always talking about the weather, to warm it up.
I will do that. I guarantee you I will do that. I'll get back to you in a couple of months and get around to it.
You're the worst. Listen,
how
are you?
The cold weather is good. It's good for sales of coats, so some people like it.
And now that you're going to be reducing the sales tax on those sort of
absolutely.
Items?
Absolutely. You should be. It's a good time to buy.
Things are going to be very good. Speaking of the very cold weather, it's easy to laugh about, but if you don't have heat, as some people in the city of New York are reporting.
Call 311. I mean, you know, whenever it's the same thing every year. When it gets cold, sometimes generally it's that the equipment just doesn't break and they try to fix it as quickly as possible. Every once in a while it's an irresponsible landlord, but call 311. You do not want to get into a life-threatening situation, and we will make sure that nobody freezes.
Does the city go after landlords? We hear, as you say, every year, stories about landlords that ignore their buildings.
The truth of the matter is there's a handful of terrible landlords. It is a very small number, but they exist.
And if you live in a building.
And if you live in a building, there's just no question it is painful. But what's worse, it's dangerous. I mean, you can, you know, particularly if you're elderly or young.
People open up their ovens and turn on their stoves.
Well, right. Then they turn on their stoves and they start a fire and then people die. So, yeah, I mean, there's no question that it's dangerous. But in all fairness, it's very few people. And generally, when the heating doesn't work, it breaks. The landlord tries to do what's right. Getting somebody to come and fix it, probably not easy because at this time, everybody's calling, you know. They have great response time, except when you need them.
Timing is everything. 2 weeks ago, we were looking for you were looking for volunteers to help with the count on the street of the homeless, and said that if it was really cold, it would be done another night.
We actually don't do it. I don't think we change it if it's cold. We change it if it's snowing or something.
Okay. But last night, they were out.
It's around now. I checked. Was it last night?
I think it was last night. And obviously, a lot of cold weather. Your budget. You had your budget report. Good news. You got a lot of money left over on the side. Almost $4 billion.
Well, we have a lot of money. Yeah. It's your money. It's everybody's money. The tax revenues have been should put a smile on everybody's face. If you remember, 5 years ago we had $6.5 billion deficits, and today we've got $3 or $4 billion surpluses. Why? Because when we had the deficits, we did the right thing. We raised our taxes and sunk the money into making the streets safer and the schools better and the culturals more exciting and the parks more pleasant and the streets cleaner. And the result is businesses thrived here and jobs were created and people had confidence and they started building and investing. And today we're the beneficiaries of that.
You said you're going to give away $1 billion back to the people that have paid it all in already, about $1 billion.
Well, it's a balance. We're trying to, I think we have enough money to prudently reduce taxes by $1 billion, and we've tried to do two things with the tax reduction. One, those who paid 5 years ago, people that own property tax rebate, and the $400 rebate as well, so that for homeowners outside of Manhattan, their property taxes after the $400 rebate, which we've asked the legislature to continue, and after the 5% reduction, which the city council will vote, their property taxes will be lower than they were when we started. And then the other $250 million in tax relief is really to create jobs in the city and to help people. So no more city sales tax, although it's still a state one, on clothing and footwear. Very big deal. People have been going to New Jersey and to Westchester and Nassau and Connecticut to shop. Now they'll stay here, and that's good for our business. and the reduction in some small business taxes. Small businesses employ half the people in this city. So that's one part of it, reducing the tax burden. And it would be great if we can continue to do that. And we'd like to reduce taxes to zero. But the truth of the matter is everybody wants to get paid who works for the city, and we have to do
it. Some are calling for more, a bigger number of the $4
billion. I think the bottom line is that we're never sure, and you're never going to be sure, but we've had a lot of good years in a row, and there are some signs on the horizon, slowdown in the national economy, slowdown in the property market. Too many years or a lot of years of an up stock market, and just history shows that, you know, eventually things go through cycles. And I don't know if it's this year or next year, but 5 years into a cycle, you're probably closer to it than you were after 1 or 2 years into the cycle. So we have to be prudent there. We've put some money into the reserve. We have a $50 billion liability to pay health insurance for city employees, which will survive bankruptcy or anything else. That's a liability the city cannot and shouldn't walk away from. So we put $500 million in addition to the $2 billion we put last year and the year before into a fund towards paying that obligation down the road, and took in roughly $1.5 billion and prepaid interest that would be due in the fiscal year 09 because the deficits there are big. Yeah. Now, a year from now, hopefully you and I will be sitting here and saying, hey, you know, we were worried about a downturn. It didn't happen. And so we can continue the tax reduction. We can put some more money in reserve. We can make sure our programs are benefit more people. But it's always a balancing act. You want to help those who need help. You want to keep the burden as low as you possibly can. You want to have a reserve for the future. So if the things don't work out, you don't get in the same problem that we had back in 02 and 03. And if you remember, those were painful times.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got lots to do. We've got some time ahead of us, so we'll be taking phone calls at the end of the program, as we always do as well. Let me take my first break. We'll take care of that business. And back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. 77 WABC. We are talking with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, as we do each and every Friday here at 77 WABC. Mr. Mayor, three weeks ago, you and I were talking about a concern on your part, or people in the administration, about Wall Street and New York being the financial hub of the world. You commissioned a study. They said that because of regulation and laws, New York is at a disadvantage?
I think that it's fair. It's for sure true that we have less of an advantage than we did before.
Over places like London, Hong Kong.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember, we really had a lot of technology and regulation that gave people confidence in financial statements and infrastructure and investment by big banking firms here, and the world came here to do their banking. Today, London and Hong Kong and Singapore and Zurich and Frankfurt and a lot of other places have duplicated a lot of the things that we have. Now, do we have things that drive business away from us? Possibly. There is the argument that Sarbanes-Oxley gets people to list overseas. I think you got to be careful. Chuck Schumer and I have talked about this. We want good regulation. One of the great strengths of American markets are that because of regulation and hopefully the SEC doing a good job, you can depend on the financial statements of American companies more than you can depend on financial statements of any other companies, and that's really important to investors. On the other hand, the cost of compliance with Sarbanes-Oxley, particularly for small companies, can be really onerous.
I hear people complain about all
Well, okay,
the time.
But they complain all the time. I think you got to be very careful here and not throw out the baby with the bathwater. We want to make it rational and affordable, but I don't think it's in anybody's interest not to have regulation. And remember, all of these regulations came about because of companies like Enron that were just out-and-out frauds. And when you do something like that, the consequences are we're going to have more regulation. That's just there was also, I think, there was a vacuum at the federal level. The SEC, which now really is doing a good job, for a while did not do what they were should have done, and that left a vacuum. In government, a vacuum is always filled. That's filled. That's why state attorney generals like Elliot Spitzer got involved in doing things that I think I can't speak for the governor, but I think he'd probably agree should have been done at a national level. They just weren't being done. Is Sarbanes-Oxley the only thing that hurts us? No, I think Europe is where there's a lot of banking business. The economy is growing and a lot of stuff. That would naturally go to European markets. Latin America, which is closer and in the right time zone for us, doesn't have a lot of banking business at the moment. So we're at a disadvantage just geographically because where the business is. But we have to come back to making sure that we have affordable regulation. We need one regulator right now. There are too many different regulators. There's insurance regulation. There's banking regulation. There's stock regulation. There's commodity regulation. You need one regulator. And countries overseas have one regulator. That doesn't mean less regulation, but it makes it much more efficient. Right now, some of our regulators require things that another regulator here prohibits. And, companies are getting whipsawed. So we can do a lot better in Washington. We still have to focus on making New York safe and affordable and exciting as a place to live. And long term, I still think we have a great future here. We are going to have more competition, and that's just going to make it tougher.
It sounds to me like you are very concerned about this, as it is connected to what we were just talking about, the budgets, the surpluses, and the future.
Everything is all tied together. London and Singapore and all these other places, they're great places to live. They're nice cities. I don't want to knock them at all. But, we have to make New York better and more attractive than the others, and that's what we're working on.
All right. Different topic. Ray Kelly was before the city council 2 days ago.
Yep.
And there were accusations made about the police department that the police commissioner was correctly very upset about profiling of blacks and race issues that were completely, in my view, out of sort.
I've thought long and hard about it. How do you tell? Well, number one, we have, 40,000 police officers. I can't tell you every single one always behaves correctly, but I will say
we have the best police
commissioner the city has ever had, and this is a department that's better trained than they've ever been. We've built on past commissioners' works and past mayors' works, but it gets better and better and better, and nobody should think that this police department isn't great. Could it be better? We're going to constantly work to make it better, and one of the things that, Ray is doing is looking to see whether or not there aren't practices that we should change in retrospect. And so he's got an outside group. He's hired a company to come in and look at that. I've put more money into the budget for the Civilian Complaint Review Board so that if you have a complaint, they'll have the staff to take a look at it and see whether there's any legitimacy to it. And then we can fix things if they're broken, but we've got to find out. The problem of whether or not you stop more of one group or another, I think is the ways to look at it is you have to take, you can only do that in the context of when you talk to a victim and you say, describe your attacker, and then go and see, take a look at the percentage of times they say the attacker is, let's say, over 6 feet tall. And then go and look and see, do we stop a disproportionate percentage of people over 6 feet tall? Because the police have to go, and when somebody reports that they have been victimized, they have to go out and look for the person, and they're going to stop people who fit the description. And so you want to see whether or not that isn't the determinant, whether that if they're stopping roughly the same percentage of people over 6 feet tall as were reported as perpetrators of over 6 feet tall, then they're probably not profiling people over 6 feet tall. Can I guarantee every police officer does that? No, but you have to look at the things on balance. I think what we have to make sure, however, is number one, the best training that we can get for police officers. Ray Kelly and our police department really understand profiling is wrong. We have an executive order against it. Nobody should feel threatened. I can't tell you that everybody's perfect, but we're going to do that. We're going to work to try to get at the root causes of crime. We'd all be a lot better off if there was lower crime, and that's the school system, and that's police working with communities and all of that sort of stuff. So it's a multi-pronged thing.
The comments from the city council? Over the top?
Well, you know, I didn't listen to all of them. I think you have to understand legislators sometimes aren't armed with facts, and there's an allegation, although I'm sure it's not true, that they might say things just because they want to see their name in print or think it's good for their constituents. But they wouldn't do that, would they?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I can't imagine.
I can't imagine either.
The budget process, you and the Speaker of the City Council, what was the issue on the not-for-profits and the dollars and cents?
Monies have been given out to non-for-profits for as far back as anybody can tell, based on their lobbying a member of the City Council or maybe a member of the administration, and not on the basis of whether they deserve the money. This is the public's money. You have to have a process. And fundamentally, what Patty Harris, the first deputy mayor, and Kate Levin, the commissioner for the Department of Cultural Affairs, are trying to do is to have a process where a group of experts, somebody's got to make a decision, so experts on performing arts and visual arts and those kind of things, try to reward those institutions that are struggling and need the money and are working hard to contribute to the great cultural fabric of this city. In the past, there was too much money being done as what you'd call at the state level member items. And now the agreement is most of it will be done by a committee. There'll still be a tiny bit where a city council person could put a little bit of money into the budget for what they want to do. But fundamentally, it's going to make the process a lot more, and the arts institutions love it, because they don't have to waste their money and time lobbying. What they can do is focus on trying to
make presentations and proposals.
Yeah, and there's big institutions like the Metropolitan Museum, which mm-hmm. is in a city building and gets a lot of money. And then there's this tiny little performing arts center far away from Fifth Avenue in Staten Island or in Brooklyn or in Queens or in the Bronx. And they're struggling, and there's not a big audience, but it's interesting, and we want to be able to support them, too.
All right. Makes a lot of sense. It's just a sort of streamlining.
It's accountability, responsibility, and spending the public's money wisely.
Accountability and spending the public's money wisely. We'll talk about that with the mayor when it comes to education, some thoughts he has, some thoughts the unions have, as we continue at 77 WABC. Half-hour break. 77 WABC. We continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. Police radios in the subways. What's with that? The story in the Times this week.
We're trying.
They're not working, or there's a buzz, or they don't work.
The MTA and the NYPD are working together. They've been up for a long time. I did talk to Ray Kelly this morning about it. MTA is really doing everything they can, and we have nothing but good things to say about them. It is a very difficult environment. Radio signals that work above ground don't tend to go through ground. They're in some places. They reflect. They come in two different entrances and cancel out each other. It's just not very easy. The environment here, you know, if you're out in the suburbs in a small community where the buildings or houses are built of wood, yeah, radios work every place. But then you get into a big urban environment, and it's much tougher. Radio waves don't penetrate some of these buildings if you're down in the basement or if you're way up in a skyscraper. And subways, it's particularly difficult. But in all fairness, the MTA has been working on this. They're funding it. They're working with the PD. And hopefully we will eventually figure out a ways to get radios where everybody's in communications all the time, but it just isn't easy.
All right, dollars and cents for all of this come out of the MTA budget?
I think the MTA is paying for the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you can criticize any group for anything, but there's no criticism here. It's complex, and it's easy to say, oh, they should have radios. Yeah, well, they should, and we're trying to get them.
horribly sad story this week about Cesar Borgia dying, retired police officer, allegedly from diseases gotten from the World Trade Center 9/11, his son, at the Capitol this week for the State of the Union. Medical bills. You're now calling for the feds to.
We want the feds to give us what we had before, a compensation fund where we can compensate people who have diseases that were caused by their time down at the World Trade Center site when the air obviously was not clean. They did have a fund. If you remember, Feinberg ran it and did a great job. It no longer exists. We really could use the money to do it again. The feds did give us a captive insurance company, separate money, which is designed to protect the contractors who work down there. Remember, if the contractors go bankrupt because of liability downtown, the next time there's a disaster, there's no contractor that's going to go in. I mean, they just wouldn't respond. And the government recognizes that, so they're trying to protect them. The city believes it, by federal law, does not have a liability. But that has nothing to do with this particular tragic case. This particular tragic case was a retired police officer, pensions and the health benefits of the city take care of it. And it's people are confusing the two things.
All right. Speaking of downtown, again, a handful of people are still upset with you about the naming situation, now going to television, internet campaign.
Well, this is one of those emotional things where you will never please everybody. But we've made a decision. It's been approved by the board of the World Trade Center Memorial. And we'll go ahead and do what we agreed to do. In the meantime, fundraising is going we're up
going
to
very well. You're doing a great job there.
John Rosenwald and lots of other people are contributing. As a whole board, everybody's working at it very hard. We have a meeting next week of we're trying to do industry meetings, get people together in a room, and there's a number. We'll keep pressing, and would like to raise $350 million. The memorial scheduled to cost this Port Authority money and federal money. This should be $300 million in private money. But in case there's a slight overage, I want to make sure we have a little bit of reserve. And I'd like to have a little endowment so that the museum can run. And if ticket sales aren't as good as they think, they'll still have the money from an endowment to make sure that the museum tells the story that in a tasteful and way that we would be proud of.
When you get on the phone looking for money, or any of the board members get on the phone, talk about it personally. Are people excited about this? There's an emotional thing here, and when the mayor of New York City calls, they're going to be more receptive to the story. What is the emotion level over this memorial?
Well, number one, I think you're going to see next week we're going to start to pour concrete down there. And as the memorial starts to get built, it will go up. And we're working on some strategies to get people around the country and around the world interested. For some people, the emotions are distant in the past. It's 6 years since 9/11. For family members, it's probably like it happened this morning. So it's a whole variety of things. When I talk to somebody to try to get them to give money, you talk to them about the purpose of the memorial, why it's so important that we build this, why it has to be done to some extent with private funds, why they would get great satisfaction of being part of it and contributing their money or their stockholders' money, why that's appropriate for a company to do. That's be a great New Yorker, be a great American. You should care. You're leaving a legacy. All of those are the kinds of things that you use when you talk to somebody.
But there is a distancing with every passing day for some.
Well, that's one of the reasons to do this as expeditiously as possible. We live in a society where it's today and yesterday's forgotten very quickly. But I don't think that we should forget, and that's one of the reasons for the memorial, is so that we don't forget. And the families want you to remember their loved ones. They have to remember their loved ones. I think for the rest of us, it is remembering that some people found our freedom so threatening, they took 3,000 lives, and to make sure that we don't let that happen again.
I was reading a story. In fact, it was emailed to me by one of my sons. It was about you being sort of the point person around the country when it comes to mayors who want to do what you and Joel Klein have done here in New York City when it comes to education. You're sort of the go-to guy these days.
Look, I think we're doing the right thing in education. It's always controversial. It's when you have 1,100,000 kids, I guarantee you I can find a school that's not doing well. I mean, you know, you're dealing with so many big numbers that if you want to find something wrong with anything, you can. And this is a social world. It's not just the scientific world where I can prove to you if you push this button, that thing pops up. In this case, there are relationships that are much harder to measure. There's never a clean experiment. There's always other factors that come in. But I don't think there's any real question. We're going in the right direction. We are moving money from bureaucracy to the classroom. The teachers in our city are better than they've ever been, and lots of people from around the country want to come to teach here. The principals are better trained and doing a better job than ever. We've gotten smaller schools. The graduation rate has gone up 10 points, which is a very big deal. The gap between different ethnicities and how they test is still much too high, but is coming down a little bit. You know, test scores are going up. There's an enthusiasm. And while there's always somebody that's going to say, oh, you're not making any progress, it's just a lot of motion, people around the country, as you point out, believe we are going in the right direction. And whether it's Joel Klein or Randy Weingarten, or whether it's a principal or a teacher or a custodian or a school safety agent, everybody really is working together. And the results are there.
Speaking of Randy Weingarten, she's commented on a couple of your proposals here of refinancing or moving finances around from school to school to make them more lateral in inequality. She says that that's going to kill off the good schools trying to help the bad.
Number one, fairness dictates that everybody has the same right to resources, and it's pretty hard to say anything other after that. I don't know what the heck you're talking about. We will make sure, if you listen very carefully to what Joel Klein said, what we're going to do is not take any money away from schools that are overfunded, but take new monies and send those new monies to schools that are underfunded, and have a system where when a child moves from one school to another, fundamentally, the money follows the child, and that will give schools incentives to do a good job. What we're trying to do is say to the people in that school, the teachers, the administrators, you've got to do a good job or you're not going to survive. That's what the people who are paying the bills have to deal with in their private lives every day. You and I, if you don't
get anywhere on this,
absolutely.
Education is not geared in that mindset.
In New York, it is getting more and more and more. Principals understand they've got to do a good job. Principals are willing to sign on. Next year, we're going to have a report card out on every school. They get graded A to F. Now, if you have your kids at a school graded F, and you're not going to be happy. And the principal's not going to survive if it stays in F school. They're going to have to deliver. The teachers have to deliver. But that's what you see. Teachers want to come to work here because they want to work in a challenging environment where they're held accountable. But they want the authority to go along with the responsibility. And that's what we're trying to do, is to give each school the authority to control their own destiny and the responsibility to do a good job.
You know what else they want to, and I know you do know, because it's like all human beings. We want to know somebody cares about the job or the work that I am doing.
Absolutely.
And that's a huge motivator, and I think in the past there's been too many instances where that hasn't been the case. So.
Well, I think we're going in the right direction, and it is very gratifying when you read, I read that article too, when you read articles about people around the country want to replicate what we're doing here in New York. That doesn't mean there won't be headlines all the time. I know newspapers and everybody else trying to stir things up, but you know, there's always something that isn't working. But you got to step back and look at the majority. That's where the headline should be, and sadly it isn't. But we're still going to do that.
I'm hurt that you would think that the media is trying to stir things up. Let me take a break when we come
but
back.
Not this media.
When we come back, your chance to ask the questions of Mayor Michael Bloomberg. 1-800-848-WABC. 77-WABC. These Friday hours always go so fast. A few minutes left for you. 1-800-848-WABC. Just before we go, Prince Charles is going to be in New York City.
I read that.
Are you
paper.
You have no audience with him?
Kings and queens aren't No, I'm not on that social level. We have 44 million visitors last year. He's going to help it make us 44 million in one. And foreign tourists spend a lot of money. I hope he comes.
So
he and his wife spend a lot of money here. We need the sales tax revenues. And remember, if he waits a little while, we won't have the sales tax on foreign goods, although he can probably have it shipped home and
avoid the taxes altogether.
But we want him to spend a lot of money here. Absolutely. We love visitors.
Let's go to the phones. Kathy out in Queens, you've got the mayor. You're up first. Good morning.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Mr. Mayor, thank you for all of your hard work on behalf of the city. I live on a densely populated block in Queens, which parking is a problem. As a result, people double park and illegally park, and the horn honking is intolerable. It's really become a quality of life issue. I was wondering how to go about getting a no horn blowing designation, which I've seen on other streets in our city.
Kathy, if you stay on, I'll have somebody get your name and phone number. Generally, I think what you should do is call 311. Hopefully, they can tell the Department of Transportation, and the Department of Transportation will look and do it. But I'll have somebody find out about your particular block. If you stay on, John, we can have somebody. We'll have somebody call you, let's say, by Monday or something.
All right, let me put you on hold, Kathy, and somebody will be picking up there. Let's go to Rob in the Bronx. You've got the mayor. Rob, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? I live up in the confines of the 45th Precinct, and we've been asking for more police officers here just because we have quality of life issues. What I think it's disturbing is that people like Councilman Barron and Councilwoman Foster could actually sit and knock the police for policing quality of life issues in Jamaica when there are children being shot by stray bullets in their districts, and the numbers of children that get shot every year in the district, like over by Jerome Avenue or down like by Mr. Barron in East New York, are probably much higher than those of people that are unarmed shot by the police.
Well, Rob, I can't explain why sometimes elected officials say things. I think what is clear is that there are just too many guns in the streets and there are innocent people and children being shot all the time. You're right there. Our police department does a great job. They're always looking at their procedures to see the things that Barron and Foster are screaming about to make sure that we do the best job we can. And Rob is right. There are plenty of kids getting shot, and the police have to get out there and go after the bad guys. But I spent part of this one day this week down in Washington. We had a big gun summit. We had 50 odd mayors. Yeah, we've got 110, 120 mayors signed up for this, and the mayors of most of the big cities in this country who came actually, Daley from Chicago and Menino from Boston and Diaz from Miami and Villagrosa from L.A. and the mayor of Tulsa and, lots of big cities. And we've got to get Congress to help us get illegal guns off the streets. I don't have a problem if you have a gun, as long as you got a permit. Depends on the state. You want to hunt, that's up to you. But illegal guns in the hands of criminals or sex offenders or people who are on the no-fly list and that sort of thing, it's just really a disaster. And when you take a look at the people who are – when we catch somebody committing a crime and you look at the gun – invariably, vast preponderance of them were sold illegally.
We're out of time here. I understand you're going to be traveling this week to Israel to make a dedication to your father.
Taking my mother and out a building for the ambulance corps in Jerusalem, going to be named William Henry Bloomberg Building in memory of my father. I thought my mother, who's 98 years old, would get a kick out of seeing that. And there's a couple of floors of Hadassah Hospital that are named in her honor. So my sister and I will take her over, and it's going to be a nice event.
Wonderful. Maybe we'll talk to you from Israel.
I will give you a call.
All right. Very good. Have yourself a good week. Thank you very much, as always, for being right here. The same to you on the other side of the radio. Stick around. Chris Wallace will be along. More phone calls with you as well at 77 WABC.